Hello, it's the This is the Way Phase 4 podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. Today we'll be discussing the first episode of Hawkeye, available for streaming on November 24th, 2021. It's the fourth Marvel Studios live-action show on Disney Plus this year. First WandaVision, then The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and then Loki. There was What If, of course, an animated look at the multiverse, but Hawkeye brings together two comic book versions of the same character in the same universe. One will most likely hang up his bow on the wall after this one, and another will take it up. We will talk about the show, of course, but we may bring up or mention anything Marvel Studios has produced up to the moment of this podcast's release. If you're not interested in hearing how things might tie together or fit with the rest of Marvel's canon in Phase 4 or beyond, maybe this isn't the right place for you. You have been warned.
We got you now, bro.
Monogrammed butterscotch.
There is a giveaway going on right now. You can listen to our past podcasts for rules for entry, but you will need a Twitter account, and you'll have to know how to use it. Ours is the same as our Instagram handle, @thewayphase4. You'll also need to send us an email. Our address is thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. And you can also visit us on Facebook to take part in this podcast, facebook.com/thewayphase4. If we get feedback, we will share it.
Why are you making it so tough on us, bro?
I'm This Is The Way Phase 4's Steve Lascalzo, and I'd like to tell you about cufflinks.com. You've looked all over the multiverse for a gift that will make that Marvel fan in your life look snappier than Thanos. You're looking in the wrong place. It's not in Odin's vault. The collector doesn't have what you need. Visit cufflinks.com. There you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, of course, but you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and much, much more. The Marvel offerings will amaze you. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful accessories or wear something so subtle, even Hawkeye would have to look twice to notice. You don't have to have a need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you just might find yourself considering a bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you see those Thanos Infinity Gauntlets or Captain America shields. There's more than Marvel, too. DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, and collegiate offerings, and of course, Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars-themed podcast, we can offer you 15% off your purchase when you enter THEWAY15 in the coupon code box at checkout. Do you need something to dazzle a Shostakov, Vostokov, Romanov, or Belova? Do you need another high-quality accessory to take the focus off your 10 rings of power? Do you want to look marvelous while wearing Marvel? Well, cufflinks.com has you covered no matter which universe you call home. Check out cufflinks.com today.
Come on!
All right, episode 1 is titled Never Meet Your Heroes. The runtime says 50 minutes, but I time it from the first action we see to when the credits roll, and it was 44 minutes and 10 seconds or so. The full description on Disney Plus for the episode: Kate Bishop, a skilled archer whose overconfidence can cloud her judgment, lands in the middle of a criminal conspiracy. Meanwhile, Clint Barton's much-needed Christmas trip to New York City with his kids is interrupted when a painful part of his past resurfaces. It's just a matter of time till their paths cross, forcing Hawkeye out of retirement. And the brief description cuts that down to Archer Kate Bishop lands in the middle of a criminal conspiracy, forcing Hawkeye out of retirement. Jeremy Renner is back as Clint Barton. Haley Steinfeld appears to be a good Kate Bishop, at least in the first episode that I saw. She's joined by Vera Farmiga, who plays her mother. And one of the really bright spots of Better Call Saul, Tony Dalton is here as Jack Duquesne. The director for episode 1 is Rhys Thomas, but his name doesn't appear often in the credits. I'm not sure if it's because he didn't do a lot, because the second unit director is the first name shown in the end credits, and three assistant directors show up in the opening credit sequence in addition to Thomas's name. Writing credits go to Jonathan Igla, also the creator showrunner, a guy who pretty much hit home runs in his first gig for Mad Men, and then most recently co-executive produced the hit show, on Netflix at least, Bridgerton. The first two episodes were made available on day one, November 24th, and I always feel like when something like that happens, it's almost like it's a two-parter, and the episodes continue a theme. In this case, both the first two episodes have the same director credited, different writers, which also doesn't necessarily mean much since these shows tend to be written by a staff, and it's just up to the showrunner who is given credit where, but the showrunner's fiance is the one who is credited on episode two, so take that with a grain of salt. For my purposes, we're not going to do deep dives on these shows. We're going to treat them more like The Falcon and the Winter Soldier than WandaVision or even Loki. That's not to say there aren't mysteries to be solved. It's just that there are people with much more time and patience and resources to flesh out every single frame of every single scene. Every now and then I'll catch something, and as the season goes on, I'll start to watch for things that others have brought up, and sometimes I see something and I just have to Google it. But my goal here is to discuss what happened and then offer my thoughts, not catch every single Easter egg. This show begins exactly where Loki began, not just in place, but in time as well. New York City, 2012. That's when Loki led the Chitauri through the portal in the Battle of New York. The action doesn't pick up in the battle, but I want to point out something I noticed about the start of the show and the opening credits. This show is all about Kate Bishop. She is taking over the mantle of Hawkeye. It's clear from the get-go. We see Kate as a young child, listening to her parents arguing, seemingly about moving. Kate's father seems sympathetic to her and protective, and when the parents hear Kate listening to the arguing, it's Dad who goes to check on her. She asks what would happen in a hurricane, and he says the same thing. If anything happened, he'd protect her. So that's pretty prophetic there. A hurricane is a natural disaster, and then there's going to be a disaster, although not natural, coming pretty soon in the episode. Kate's mother doesn't seem cold or distant, but Eleanor does seem to indicate with her frustration toward her husband that Daddy is the favorite. When Kate spends time with her in the kitchen, however, they seem to get along fine, and there doesn't appear to be any rift, except for the one that we know caused the argument, of course. It appears to be money, a very common marriage spat. There's a lot of clues to that relationship here. The Bishops seem to be in a spot of financial worry, and for Eleanor, we learn she's new money, where she wants to immediately sell their penthouse in New York at the first sign of trouble. The father, Derek, though, much more level-headed, and he must be old money from what Eleanor says of him growing up. The desire to hold on to that wealth may come into play later in the season. While there's a lot we can infer, we're in New York in 2012, and really, we're just waiting to see what happens and when the battle starts. What happens is the invasion begins, and there's little rumblings, shadows flying overhead. Things are happening that start disturbing the house. Kate wanders around and discovers the study is blown apart downstairs. Her father is nowhere to be found. Stark Tower you can see in the distance, and there's a charging Chitauri seemingly heading right toward Kate. That's when an arrow hits the mark on the invader's flying vehicle, exploding and saving Kate. She sees Clint Barton fighting on the edge of a building, leaping off, firing an arrow with a tether to swing himself to safety. She's in awe. Now, the scenes don't perfectly match up between Avengers and this show, but it's close enough. Her mother sweeps her off to safety, but Kate can't help but think about her dad. Apparently, Derek was a casualty of the blast. Weeks later, Kate and her mom are at a graveside service for her dad. Here, Kate is more stoic than you might expect a young girl to be, saying she will be the one to protect her mother. Her mother says whatever she needs, she's here for her.
I need a bow and arrow.
It's at this point we get a really effective animated opening sequence. It's effective because it serves as a catch-us-up montage of sorts, showing us the evolution of Kate's training as she grows up. One of the things I truly appreciated was seeing Kate wasn't winning everything she did in her first try. In fact, it showed her progressing, getting beat in archery and martial arts and gymnastics, but slowly rising from getting third and second places to finally enduring and winning first place in things like fencing. As I mentioned earlier, though, the person we've known as Hawkeye appeared at a distance in the opening scene and then nowhere in the opening credits, except for the actor's name appearing. This show is about Kate, and that doesn't upset me. It just surprises me that they're treating the handoff as a foregone conclusion. There's no hint of resistance. There's no drama as a result of that. He's gonna be leaving. Clint will not be struggling to let go of his hero status. The first episode, though, does not portray this with bad writing or acting, so if this is the road they're going down, they're sticking to it. So to me, at least, it works. Is Daddy okay? It continues into the next scene, and with the exception of the action from a different vantage point, which we know was Clint Barton, we still don't get to see him in the show. We stick with Kate and see her now apparently at college. It's winter there, and there's a tower. Apparently it's called Stain Tower. And yes, I paused to read the plaque that says Stain Tower, and it mentions Obadiah Stane. Of course, that's the name of the enemy of Tony Stark in the first Iron Man movie, played by Jeff Bridges. Stane was, well, he ended up becoming the Ironmonger after trying to steal the company out from under Tony. Kate shows a little ingenuity here. She hits her target on the first shot. I guess it's a dare that she's having to hit the bell tower. But she doesn't get her desired result, so she reconfigures her arrow payload, compensates her aim, and it turns out her shot hits home. And then it does some real damage to the tower. It seems as if the bell isn't supposed to be rung anymore, but if that's the case, wouldn't the clapper have been removed? If the structure was that fragile, the snow could have brought down the thing. Her friends, or the ones she had bet with, if they weren't friends, run off, leaving her to face the security guard by herself. But why she chose to leave the door unsecured seems to me like a bit of an oversight. But also, I guess, seems to fit her character based on the next episode or so. And not to mention, it's one astute security guard, though. Even if he was on duty, knowing where someone was on the roof while the bell tower was rung, and then it came down, he knew to go upstairs rather than to look outside. I mean, but she had to get caught somehow, right? So we'll just let that go. The action switches to the Barton family, so finally we're going to get to see Clint. They're taking in Rogers the Musical, and they're visiting all the sights you'd expect to see on a trip to New York at Christmas. We will get to see Clint and family for a little less than 5 minutes before we end up heading back to see Kate. But we see Clint is generally okay with a misportrayal of how things happened in the Battle of New York in the musical. What he appears to have trouble most about is the representations of Natasha Romanoff, his friend. Both on stage, but also there's a little girl in the audience in cosplay. It's still raw for him. He visits the bathroom and sees Thanos was right graffiti. And I read his face as he actually was considering it rather than being in disgust. So clearly he's adjusting well. And it's to everything except his most recent trauma of losing his best friend that he's adjusted. There's a meta moment of the guy asking for a selfie, not taking the polite no for an answer. And then later at the sink, he kind of says, oh, is now a good time? Clint goes out for some air. His kid's sensitive to his silent suffering. And silence, a pretty versatile word right there, because he's wearing a hearing aid. He is human, after all. He's been around some huge explosions, and he doesn't have super healing. So they leave the play early, but no one seems bothered by that in the least.
It's Christmas in New York, and we're out of here.
Back to Kate, and she's either home on break, home because of the incident, or maybe both. She arrives at Grand Central Station, and no one is there to meet her, but that very well may be a New York mentality. You know, being able to take so many different forms of transportation to get home. Although she's part of an apparently wealthy family, and they didn't send a car service for her. It could be her own desire for self-sufficiency, and it probably is. We see her get home, have a conversation with her mom, who not only hasn't told her of the evening plans in full, but also seems to think now isn't the best time for a discussion with her daughter because she can't be late. We learn Kate's credit cards are canceled because of the bell or clock tower destruction, or both. And we see also that Kate is presenting another medal to her mother, a U.S. Open Martial Arts Championship medal. Her mother does seem proud, but also makes a remark about maybe it's time to put away some of her earliest medals. And I don't know if that's how she should see things. You know, I would think the earliest ones, even the second and third placers, would be the most special to someone who's been there for the whole journey. As we saw in the intro sequence, Eleanor seemingly was. Her priorities are in question to me, but so is her general mental state based on later scenes. Kate knows of Jack, but she seems unhappy when he comes around the corner to see her. She's not meeting him for the first time, but I think she puts together her mom's new penchant for sword displays with Jack getting too close for her comfort. Eleanor had asked as a way of making it up for the bell tower incident for Kate to wear a red dress that she has for the gala they're going to. Eleanor is wearing a red dress, so she wanted her to match, I guess. But we'll see. She doesn't humor her mother's request later. So mom is asking, hey, come be a clone of me, wear that red dress, and we'll be like twinsies. Whether it's for the story purposes or not, Kate is rejecting her mother in favor of, I guess, her father, right? But then we head back to Clint.
That can't be right, is it?
We head to a Chinese restaurant, and the first shot is a cat with a waving arm, and we saw something very similar in the very first episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That one was in a sushi house, if I'm not mistaken, and I think we're supposed to be in a Chinese restaurant here. I looked that cat up to see if it was some kind of a mistake, and I found that it is called a Maniko Niko. Maniki Niko. Maniki Niko. I can't read Mandarin or Kanji, decipher what's on it, and I quite obviously can't pronounce it very well. But what I read is that the gold cats are for wealth and prosperity, and as are ones that are waving a left arm, which I think both the one in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier and this one are. I don't think there are any tie-ins, though, between the two cats, the two restaurants, or the two shows. I think it's just something that they put in there. Clint and family are going to get a little more than 2 minutes before we get to go back to Kate for a long stretch. So this is a real short scene. Clint's wife's on the phone at dinner. It's here, I think, to tell us why she's not there with them more than anything. He's splurging for the kids. You know, here he's feeding them lots and lots of food, lavishing love on them to work something out inside of himself, I believe. And it's just 6 days to Christmas. But then his generosity towards his kids ends up getting cheapened a little bit by the generosity of the restaurant. They offer to pay for his whole meal. He's uncomfortable with the gesture, but he accepts it as humbly as he can.
It's necessary. You saved our city.
Oh, thank you.
We then spend more than 16 minutes with Kate before going back to Clint's family. Kate did not wear the red dress like her mom. She wears a tuxedo, all black. And now, you know, that's more like her dad, right? But this all black tuxedo just so happens to match the server attire at this gala. I don't know if that's something Kate knew or it's just a weird coincidence. Remember, her mother insinuated that Kate was being an elitist by complaining about going to the charity event, but then here Kate wears the uniform of the working class that they must wear to serve the wealthy. A waiter even walks by and tells her to get back to work. Anyway, she soon meets Armand Duquesne, or meets him again.
You used to come to my brownstone for brunch.
Oh, build your own blintz bar.
Precisely.
Just a weird interaction, if you ask me. So the first time I saw the show, I thought he was being rude to her from the get-go. But on my second watch, I don't think that's the case at all. He does assume that she knew about the impending wedding between Jack and Eleanor, but his comment about wearing a dress there to not compete with him in a tuxedo, it came off much differently to me the second time I saw it. Also, he just seems to be challenging Eleanor, and not the entire Bishop family. Though I thought perhaps the first time I saw it, he was dragging the family. It was more just Eleanor, and perhaps with good reason. I'm not sure if Bishop was Eleanor's maiden name, or if Derek Bishop was the name you know, of the family, and Eleanor kept the name. We see an entitled Armand the Seventh come up, but even this young little boy seems to have at least as much manners as Kate. He's a little rude, but so is she. And we finally get her mom telling her in less than a minute about the wedding and then letting her go get some air. Something she could have done much earlier in her welcome home. Instead of giving the lukewarm greeting that she gave her, she could have spent that 1 minute telling her about the wedding. The most important information, right? Kate goes outside and we meet a dog with one eye. And I had to look this up because of what happens later in the episode and just repeatedly. Apparently this is Lucky Pizza Dog or something. The way the dog was presented here, it felt like it was being sent to her or something. Or like it was like attached to her in some way. Nope. It's just a stray that Hawkeyes have adopted in the comics. The scene sets up his rescue later, but it plays so long. That's why I was like, what's up with this dog? Back inside she goes and she searches for mom, finds her in an argument with Armand the Third, and he's kind of threatening her. So Kate, remember, she wants to be the protector. She follows Armand through the catering kitchen where we find out on a whiteboard that there are indeed 6 or maybe less days to Christmas, but you know, Clint said I think 6 days. And I wonder if each episode is going to be a day leading up to Christmas. She follows Armand into a wine cellar, and then Jack shows up as well, and there's clearly animosity between these two. I guess, though, these are actual comic villains. I did a Google search on their names. Armand seems to be the Crimson Cavalier, and very good with swords, and Jack, or Jacques, is the swordsman. Whenever I Google something, I end up going down a rabbit hole. Many times there's some similarities that the MCU or television series, they end up adapting. The swordsman, for example, figures heavily in Clint Barton's past, but Clint and Jacques don't see too far afield in age here. They don't seem too far apart in age, in other words. Then there's storylines that bring up Kang with the swordsman. So I'm left wondering, is there a tie-in here? You know, especially post-Loki. Except Armand, who was the Crimson Cavalier, is the father, I think, of Jacques in the comics. And I don't get that dynamic here. Maybe Eleanor is actually a sleeper widow agent, and Armand and Jacques' comic book backstories are somehow tied together similarly here in the show, like Eleanor and Armand and Jacques in French Southeast Asia. I don't know. Kate gives a waiter a story about how Gary wants her there when she's down in the wine cellar. But then Gary ends up turning up and she has to talk to the real Gary, but she doesn't crack under pressure. I like that she pretends to quit her fake job and storms off, and then she ends up being able to hide.
You don't even know my name. You know, this is not going to work out. I quit.
You can't quit. Hold on.
During the auctioning, first of some dinosaur skull, and I didn't even bother Googling that because I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole. Probably something to do with Kang. Then Ronan's sword comes up and Armand outbids Jack for it. Then the outfit is announced, but Kate hears a commotion in an antechamber. It sounds like something's going to go down. Kate's hiding in the shadows while Armand outbid Jack for the sword, but before he can take possession, an explosion rocks the wine cellar. For that to take place in that enclosed space, it's a wonder anybody can hear at all. Kate obviously takes the opportunity to don the Ronin outfit and comes to the aid of Armand and Jacques at the cellar door. I keep calling him Jacques. I guess he's Jack, right? She takes down a tracksuit-wearing goon, and Jack comes face-to-face with Kate in the Ronin outfit. He's close enough to notice her eyes. But also he knows the outfit was up for sale. It was just announced. Someone in the room has to have put it on, right? I think he knows it's her. Kate fights, and as in all of her fighting, it's sadly a bit unbelievable. I completely believe she could handle herself just fine if she was just fighting one guy one-on-one. And she'd have to be at enough of a distance for her punches and kicks to land with the right force. But if you've been in a fight, you know, a 5 foot something girl grappling with a 6.5 foot, 300 pound Eastern European thug, she is not going to last no matter how skilled she is. This is the problem anytime you have fights with, you know, people of different heights and different weights and stuff. That's why there are different weight classes. But more than that, we're talking about a big diff. We're not talking even about a full-size Natasha Romanoff here. We're talking about a little 22-year-old girl who's a lot smaller. Her fights could have been choreographed a little bit differently, unless somehow she's been actually given some super serum that I'm not aware of, but I don't think so. To be fair, the thugs likewise probably would have been knocked cold by the bottles of wine she was forcefully bringing to their faces. They wouldn't be staying in the fight after the stuff like that either. I did like her failure at the Black Widow-esque takedown where she tried to grab onto the pipe. She literally falls out of failure and into success on that one.
We've got 90 seconds to find a watch. Everything else is secondary.
Let's go, bro.
The tracksuit mafia, as they're called, was searching for a particular watch. It's really the only thing that they're after. The bags and bags of auction items in the cellar are being brought out by them into an Empire linen supply truck. And one of the henchmen says he finds the watch, lot 268. No idea what that signifies. I really felt here as well like the dog was supposed to be some special thing on the first watch. That's why I Googled him after the show. The dog just happens to be there, just happens to go after the henchman when he has the watch. Now, I don't see where that watch ends up. I thought maybe the dog was going to have it in his mouth or something. I think he just, you know, the henchman just slipped it back in the bag when he got taken down. The dog takes off. Kate came out right at the truck from underneath the ground. So she runs off after the dog. Why, I don't know. So why she came out there and nobody else did. And then why she runs off after the dog when she sees that henchman guy in the truck. You just go with it. The tracksuit goons start chasing her. And then she ends up saving the dog in traffic and she gets away. But one of the goons lifts his mask. Why would you do that? And then we get a name for him, Kazi. Jack, Eleanor, and the Charity Gala patrons are all out in front with the commotion. Jack rejoins Eleanor from the auction, but we don't get a shot of Armand joining them or in the crowd. It's possible he never made it out of the cellar, but he probably did based on something that happens later. We then switch to Clint, who is in a huge hotel suite. I think, it's a gigantic, really ritzy hotel. He could be staying in someone else's apartment, I guess. It's a big setup, though. And he's trying to lavish the kids with a wonderful vacation, remember? His daughter turns on the news, and then Clint sees a ghost. Not literally. Someone is wearing his Ronin outfit. He's got a flashback to his killing time before Natasha saved him from himself. And all we get just about a minute with the Barton family before it switches back to Kate.
What's a beaker? Okay.
She brings her new four-legged friend home. I guess she's adopting. It seems like she found a leash. I don't know how long she's been gone for, but she goes right to her apartment. I don't get that reasoning. She proceeds to monologue for our sake. She talks to the dog, asking if it thinks Armand is connected to the break-in. She opines about how he was threatening his mom and dealing with black market swords. And she gives the dog pizza, but not a name yet, unless I missed it. But, Lucky Pizza Dog, I think, is what it was called in the comics. She's not relaxing, though. She goes right back out. She's there for, like, a minute, and she goes back out with the suit. I don't know how... what her thinking is here. She's going to go right back out wearing the same suit. This time, she's just straight up trespassing. She goes to Armand's house, a guy she doesn't know well. In fact, she Googled it or something with her iPhone or something. She must know that he doesn't have the sword after what happened in the auction. What is she going to do there? Is she going to stay there all night if something happens? She remarks about his monogrammed butterscotch. Not sure if that's some comic book thing or not. She's very bold, snooping around as if this outfit makes her invisible and invincible. She gets to the sitting room. She finds Armand III dead. It doesn't quite echo what happened to her father, especially since there's no structural damage to the room. Remember, the father was killed, I guess, in the Battle of New York in the study. And here Armand is face down in a pool of blood. So he probably was killed there. You know, if he was killed and then moved there, there wouldn't probably be so much blood on the ground. A housekeeper comes home with dry cleaning and dinner, but Kate escapes. She goes out of the frying pan and into the fire. The guys in tracksuits are after her, the bro patrol. They're always saying bro. For some reason, though, she doesn't try to run from them. There's so many guys surrounding her. She decides to fight them. Instead of like running when the second truck comes up after, she could just run past it. She doesn't do that well either. She ends up having to try to hide in a car, an unlocked car, which is like a unicorn in New York, I'm sure. The bros also have bats. Apparently, though, they're going to punch their way through the window glass. They got bats, but no, let's punch the glass. As soon as they do, someone saves her. How Hawkeye found her is just utterly amazing. But hey, he does. He pulls her into an alley, and somehow she doesn't find him or try to attack. He unmasks her, and if you count his first strikes against the tracksuit mafia before you can even see him, it's only about 56 seconds more of screen time here.
You're Hawkeye!
And who the hell are you?
I hate to be harping about the time, but let me just state out the facts here. Clint got about 9 minutes out of 44 in a show that bears his moniker. Now, that last minute also might be a little generous. It's also shared with Kate at best. I'll be honest and say I'm not sure this was the time to take stock of where Clint has been, but in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, it felt more like that buddy cop drama was evenly split between The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Kate's taking over. That's not going to change. But with only 6 episodes, there's not much time for mentorship. And the reckless youth, she needs it. I'm going to save any further thoughts because honestly, after I get this podcast recorded and published, I'm going to go watch Screen Crush and New Rockstars and realize I missed a ton of things. I don't want to sound dumb for coming up with a theory that's so far off the mark that I look silly. So there's 2 episodes available. Let me get through one first. The only thing I'll speculate on is the watch. Maybe the watch is Stark Tech and someone wants it because of that. Or maybe it's something as simple as her father's watch. You know, I was thinking like about the money problems. Maybe it's the key to some crypto wallet that has a ton of Bitcoin in it from 2012. You know, if he bought tons of Bitcoin back then, they'd be sitting on billions of dollars, right? What do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter or Instagram @thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. Don't forget about our contests or giveaways. I guess it's not a contest, it's a giveaway, both here on our channel, This is the Way Phase 4 podcast, and then also at our This is the Way podcast channel that's all about Star Wars and the Book of Boba Fett's coming up. So let me just drop in a little plug for that podcast as well. Episode 2 of Hawkeye is already available. Both were streaming from the first time on the same day, but remember, there's only 6 episodes total, so this season's going to go fast. This has been This is the Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 1 of Hawkeye. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.